It's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacey. We are on the streets in Soho right today, Saturday, right? Stacey.
God, these feel like the days of Richard when he was at Resonance before he moved on to other perhaps not so fabulous horizons, but we're in Soho. It's welcome to 2014.
Yeah, exactly. We're on Berwick Street right now, which is a famous street in Soho. Many very interesting shops. Many hipsters now occupy this street with coffee shops. There are, of course, many boutiques and record shops. This weekend is a vinyl riot for all of you folks out there and residents who are aficionados of vinyl records. There's many vinyl records on offer here on Berwick Street this weekend. If you want to, you know, fill out your vinyl collection.
You know, of course, this is Berwick Street, which is was featured on the cover of that Oasis album. It was actually a guy who I worked with who was on the cover, the guy walking down the street. But anyway, wow. So it's been it's been quite an eventful 2 or 3 weeks since we've last been here.
So much has happened in such a compressed amount of time, and so much world-shaking events have gone down that I can't remember a single one.
Well, let's start with today's episode of Kaiser Report, on which we feature Kim.com. And he announced, for the first time on television anyway, that the launch of MegaNet, which is a new internet.
Oh, so we broke the story. And MegaNet, of course, encryption is really the year of the word of the year, and certainly last year with the NSA revelations and with Bitcoin and now Kim.com with MegaNet. It's all based on encryption because, you know, we live in an age now where there is no private space anymore. That's all been co-opted by spying corporations who are looking to sell us something. I mean, at the when you add it all up, it's what it's all about. The corporations want to sell us something, so they watch us. And based on what they see, they stick an ad in our face, and they hope to get us to buy something. And we've talked about this on this show many times because it's a continuation of the technology one sees in casinos these days, where people's emotions and habits and are transformed into gambling excesses.
Well, of course, today is the anniversary of the death of Aaron Swartz, who was hounded to death, essentially murdered by the MPAA and Chris Dodd. And we did speak to Kim.com about this because, of course, Chris Dodd sent in 72 armed police and 2 helicopters to arrest Kim.com more than a year ago. So, you know, one of the things I want to, we're going to be, in this upcoming week, we're going to be talking to a guy, again, who we interviewed recently, called Arjan Kamphuis. And he's Dutch, but I think he lives in Germany. He's a tech security guy. But, you know, you talked about the corporations, and it really... Yeah, I think it's becoming quite evident that the NSA would not, they're not some super, you know, duper, all-knowing, elite spy agency. I think it's, the only reason why this works is because of the corporations like Microsoft and Yahoo. Two cappuccinos for us. But the reason why this spying works, I believe, is because of the intentional degradation of corporate products from Microsoft and Yahoo. Those seem to be the two biggest participants in the NSA spying.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, the degradation of these products. A lot of people talk about how the internet's been compromised. You know, Microsoft's been a bad actor. And you need to go back to, we've talked about this show many times, they've been a twice convicted predatory monopolist. And it should have been broken up years and years ago, the way Teddy Roosevelt broke up the big monopolist back in the previous centuries. But instead, they've been allowed to continue, and as a result, they really are part of the downfall of why American technology products are being abandoned around the world. Think of all the damage that Bill Gates and Microsoft has done with hundreds of billions of dollars worth of contracts rejected from countries around the world because all of America's technology is infested with this NSA malware. And so now it's just been diminishing returns. So this is what Bill Gates has wrought.
Well, so there's an article in this in the news this week about malware, speaking of malware, hijacking Yahoo users who went to Yahoo. Some ads were infected, and they began turning these European computers into mining Bitcoin. So one of the questions in the articles is, like, why, how did Yahoo know about this backdoor, essentially, that there was a flaw in their own software that allowed this spying to happen, this this malware to be installed? We don't even know if it's the NSA doing this. You know, they want money, they need money, they want to raise some Bitcoin, they need Bitcoin, and they could have been the ones doing this, because of course, well, no Americans were infected with this virus, this malware. And the other thing was that no Macintosh computer was. And remember, it was Mac that came last to helping. It was only after the death of Steve Jobs that they started working with the NSA.
Yeah, well, that's right. The NSA and the U.S. government is now in a mad scramble for Bitcoin, as is the Chinese government and governments around the world, because they realize that this is a mechanism for wealth transference. I mean, I saw a good tweet today saying that Bitcoin is not necessarily a currency as so much as a mechanism for wealth transference. It unwinds what has been going on in the central bank community, which has also been a wealth transference mechanism to transfer wealth from the hundreds of millions of people through artificially low interest rates into the pockets of a few bankers and brokers and their crony friends. So now Bitcoin represents the opposite. It's a wealth transference system back to the people. You would have seen this in gold and silver, but gold and silver, unfortunately, are dominated by the paper markets that are manipulated and highly leveraged. And there's no wealth, there's no price discovery, unfortunately, in precious metals at this time. But with Bitcoin, there is. And so now there's a mad scramble. So this is, I just heard a David Stockman interview on King World News. He thinks that 2014 is the year of the end game. If that's so, then the means by which the end game, the board on which the end game is being played, is a board called Bitcoin.
Well, the most remarkable thing I saw in the last 2 or 3 days was the record bullishness. Did you see this? That not since 1987 have newsletters and analysts been so bullish as right now. Now think about today versus 1987. Think about all of the things that were ahead of the American population and the global financial system in 1987. This is towards the very early days of financialization, the very early days of debt leverage. There was very little debt in the U.S. population. Most people had massive savings. They owned their homes. They had jobs that paid real wages. Now they don't. They work at Walmart. They work at McDonald's. They work several part-time jobs.
Thanks.
And should we order a porridge?
Yeah. Should we get two porridges?
Two porridges. You see, you get it all live here. This is happening right in the streets of London on Resonance 104.4 FM. But back in 87, there was a lot of our savings to trash and a lot of debt to accumulate. Now, we're here in 2014. How much more debt can we do? Can we take on? And where are interest rates? By the way, in 87, interest rates were in the beginning of their long decline down to where we are today.
Yeah, that was part of the disinflation, where interest rates in 87 were continuing on our trek down after having peaked in the 1980 period under Paul Volcker at 16% on the 10-year bond. Now interest rates on the 10-year, they got down to 140. Now they're trading around 2.83%. So there's been a bit of a change in the direction of interest rates. But it's true that the bullishness on stocks is at record levels. And also the record number of people who are bearish is even more extreme. So during the 1987 scenario, where let's say the bullishness was at record highs of, I think maybe, if I remember correctly, 65 to 70% of those polled were bullish right before the crash. You had maybe 20% or 22% that were bearish. They had a negative feeling on the market. Here you've got again over 70% bulls at the all-time high, but the record number of bears is less than 15%. So now when you add these two up, you end up with a gross spread of the bulls, bears, which has never been wider or higher. Why do people get bullish at tops? Why do people get bearish at bottoms? It has to do with the nature of economics that's tied into the mass psychology of fear and greed. So when markets crash, people get afraid. And when you ask them about stocks, they say, oh no, I'm a bear, I don't like stocks. When they get high, they say, oh, I love stocks, I'm very, very bullish. And usually the extremes of bullishness and bearishness occur at inflection points where you see reversals. And so all of the data, all the statistics, I mean, you know, I just heard a David Stockman interview that pointed out that the months in between the dot-com height and the crash and then the subsequent housing bubble and crash is about 55 months. We're now into the 55 month of this post-2008 crash. The reform never came. The banks only got bigger. The too big to fail got even bigger. And algorithmic trading got more out of control. So the stage is set not only for a crash, but for a bigger crash.
Now, one of the things that really sparked my interest, and even that this is such an inflection point, that this is such a historic moment, was Reformed Broker tweeted a screen grab. He took an image of one of a new client's investments, his portfolio. And he was like, oh my God, this is outrageous, and I'm going to dump all of these shares for this guy. This is, look at what a moron his investment advisor was. Well, the guy had GDX, which is a gold miner's, GDXJ, which is the juniors, gold, silver, some Russian ETF, things like that. So the classic, like, Peter Schiff, Mark Falber sort of investment portfolio of 2008-2009. Peter Schiff is stuck with it. Mark Falber did go long for a while. But I just thought that this was either Reform Broker is right along with 75% of the other analysts in the world. And this is the time. They're like Hugh Hendry dumping those shares. This is the final capitulation of those people invested in gold and silver. George Soros, probably the most successful hedge fund manager in the world. Warren Buffett is the most successful investor. George Soros, at the same time Hugh Hendry was saying he's ditching gold and silver and going long the market, George Soros bought $25 million worth of call options on GDXJ, for example, the junior gold miners. So it just seems like it's one of these classic sort of hedge fund moments, the sort of people who bought here or sold here.
Right. Well, after the crash of 2008, we knew that there would be an attempt to reinflate the real estate and stock market bubble, and by printing massive amounts of money. So the Federal Reserve's balance sheet has increased by 1,000%, as have balance sheets of central banks around the world increased between 500 and 1,000%. And the result is stocks where they are today and real estate where it is today. This is the response. This is what we said was going to happen. It has, in fact, played out pretty much exactly as we said it would happen. So now the question is, in 2014, now we have to make the bet and decide whether this is the year that where there's a reversion to the mean, stock market drops 20% to 30% to 50%, real estate corrects in the UK and around the world, and gold and silver resume their bull market. So this is the year for all these things. Are they going to revert to the mean? Are we going to be back to a primary trend? So, but this is the year to decide. Up until now, we knew that money printing would reinflate the bubble. That was their stated goal. They didn't do anything about wages. They didn't do anything about trade policy. They didn't do anything about any kind of addressing money laundering, you know, the scandals of J.P. Morgan and Barclays and HSBC. Those scandals have only accelerated and gotten more outrageous that they did nothing about them. So there's no thought about there being any change in direction. It's only about, is this the year that these massive overextended markets collapse? I would say the money, the smart money, says yes.
Yeah, and I think it's going to come this time around from the so-called core nations, the allegedly wealthy nations like Scandinavia, like the U.S., like Canada. You know, Greece can't fall any further than it is. it's already kaput. I mean, their unemployment numbers are still rising. I just saw an article yesterday that 1 million private sector workers have not been paid. Their employers are just not paying them, figuring that they can't afford to lose a job anyway, so they're just not paying them. So they need to work, and the hope that they might one day be paid is the only thing keeping these people showing up. They're saying that the government hasn't paid them for contracts, or the banks won't give them money, and that's why they're not paying their workers.
Well, it's a subtle form of genocide. You know, remember the American Indians on the plains of America, they were paid every day from something called the buffalo. The buffalo gave them their meat, they gave them their hide, they gave them their entire sustenance. So the U.S. Army, attempting to create a genocide of the American Indian, they hired guys like Buffalo Bill to go on the newly created railway and slaughter tens of millions of buffalo. And once you got rid of the Indians' way of life and their income, they died. So in Greece, it's a genocide is the target. By eliminating the public funds, those people will die. I mean, that's clearly the objective. Nobody cares who's enforcing these policies.
Now, speaking of people dying, you know, this bedroom tax thing, and we're going to actually take a pause in like a minute once our food is arriving right now, I see. But the bedroom tax was they found out that they've been accidentally charged. They've charged over 40,000 people with a bedroom tax that they didn't mean to, because they're exempt from it because they've been in their property since before 1996. So it's too late for one woman, however. I saw in the news this morning she committed suicide last year because of the bedroom tax and left a suicide note saying it was the government's fault. But in fact, she was exempt and would have been able to claim all the money back that they had charged her. But so that's what you say is what they're seeking, of course.
Yeah, the policy, it's genocide. I mean, genocide is a word that we know what it means. It means ethnic cleansing or genocide. It means the wholesale destruction of a group of people for profit.
It's not ethnic, it's financial. So if you've got more debt, you're already tapped out on the debt. You'll never be able to load up on any more debt. So therefore, you're useless to a debt-pushing system.
Mm. That's right. And so the program is elimination. That's the program. There's no policy. There's no attempt to create a new policy that's going to rebalance the system. Or there's no new incentive, no new subsidies. There's nothing. There's only this idea that if we cut off their air, water, and food, we don't have to worry about them anymore. And we see that in the UK right now. I mean, I think that's part of, you know, there was a story last week about the firehouses in the UK that were closed. There was one in Clerkenwell that was the oldest, I guess, in London or the UK. And there are photos of firemen crying. And in this case, I think it's a classic propaganda case, because to keep these firehouses open and to keep these jobs in place, as far as the financial considerations, it's a pimple on George Osborne's ass. It's meaningless. But to get firemen on the Daily Mail crying like that, it's a fantastic propaganda tool to strip the population of their dignity. So later, when you come around and you give them the Zyklon B and you say, swallow this and take your medicine and adios, have a good trip on the other side, they blame themselves. That's the beautiful thing about propaganda, is you get people to blame themselves for having the temerity to breathe another lungful of air. Osborne's brilliant at it, and Cameron's brilliant at it. Millions of Brits now, and they see those crying firemen on TV. They think, maybe I'm not worth living anymore. And if they kill themselves, that's less hassle for Cameron and Osborne. And they're doing a good job at it.
Well, I'm going to put this down. I want to leave it at the fact that it's also quite convenient that it's the day, you know, the Romanians and Bulgarians, who the population hate. You know, the theory going forward will be, you don't want them to have these benefits, do you? So if you don't want them to have them, we need to cut them all in order to avoid them getting any. So we'll come back to that in just a few moments. It'll feel like half a second to you out there. I see that only felt like not even a fraction of a second.
Yeah, how was your porridge?
My porridge is really good, or oatmeal, as we would call it in America.
Yeah, you know, we don't call it porridge in America. We say oatmeal, but here they got the whole porridge thing, which,
We only call it porridge and the three little bears, the little the children's tale.
Yeah, there was, too hot, too cold, and just right.
Mine was just right. How was yours?
Oh, mine was just right. I'm the Goldilocks of porridge this morning.
So, what did you want to talk about now? There was a good story we covered this past week. First of all, we covered the ganja market in Colorado. I know a lot of people on Resonance 104.4 FM right here in London would be very interested in that. And by the way, all you stoners out there, if you're really stoned right now, then pick up your browser. Pick up your fingers, go to your browser, go to resonancefm.com, and look for ways to go donate to them. Just the equivalent of one spliff could keep Resonance 104.4 FM on air another year. Now, we also talked in that episode about this thing in Wyoming, which I think is just amazing, because you could tie it to what's happening in West Virginia today, this morning, with chemical spill, 300,000 people without water because there's toxic chemicals in their water in West Virginia. But it started with this Wyoming. Wyoming, the great state, the freedom-loving, liberty-loving state, where they're so liberty-loving, they don't want any sort of restrictions at all on businesses, on corporations. And corporations were invited to come in there. Wyoming, one of the most beautiful landscapes in America previously. Well, they invited all these fracking companies to come in and frack, deliver them independence, energy independence from those bad guys in the Middle East. Well, they got some energy independence, but now it's all gone because the economics of fracking just don't make any sense, because a well only lasts between 12 and 18 months. It costs a lot of money, and it only works in zero interest rate environments. And if you can get the taxpayer schlump to pay for the cleanup. So what Wyoming now has across the state of Wyoming is 1,200 abandoned wells. The companies, the biggest one being a Patriot Resources company. Well, of course, they always use these, propagandistic terms to appeal to the schlub out there who is going to vote for this patriot. So they sought bankruptcy protection. They don't have to pay for the cleanup. The taxpayer does. It's $8 million just to clean up those 1,200, and there's another 2,500 coming behind it.
Yep, Wyoming is kaput.
Is that the sum total of your analysis of this situation?
Well, so the chemical pollution has destroyed the water supply. And this is a case where unregulated psychopaths commit massive ecological devastation. So it's not capitalism. So don't blame capitalism. It's not capitalism. It's like, cancer is not capitalism. It's opportunistic, but it's not capitalism. Which capitalism would be, let's say, some of the bacteria in your gut taken alone or in high quantities would be life-threatening. But there's a symbiotic relationship between some of the bacteria in your gut, the good bacteria, and the bad bacteria, or the white blood cells and the non-white blood cells. I mean, there are arsenic can be in small doses be beneficial. There's a open free competition that has dictated evolution for eons and generated the human being, the human species. But Wyoming is not that. Wyoming is people with unlimited money at 0% interest rate causing economic devastation for a very, very quick, easy, riskless buck. And the result is a lot of death.
Well, it just seems to be a model for some reason that many American voters will back. They will not, they hate any sort of normal person who falls on hard times and has to claim benefits from the government. But here, the corporations, they, you know, it's their business model. Everywhere you look across the U.S., their profits come directly from the taxpayer. So here, the profits had this Patriot Resources actually, you know, plan to pay for the cleanup. Their shareholders, their investors would not have made a dime. So they go into it knowing that they're going to get the taxpayer to give them the profits, the $8 million in profit. Walmart, most of their employees are on state benefits because they don't pay them enough. So therefore, the $3 billion a year in dividends that the Walton family themselves collect, that comes directly from the taxpayer. If it weren't for the taxpayer paying the food stamps and the housing benefit and the various welfare that the workers there have to pay.
Right, so the Walmart family is on a guaranteed income by the state.
Yes.
Same thing that's being argued in Switzerland. You say Switzerland wants to introduce guaranteed income for citizens. And people say, oh, my God, that's so socialist. Well, Walmart family is on guaranteed income from the state. The dividends paid out by the Walmart Corporation are subsidized by the U.S. government. Full stop. That's a guaranteed income by the state.
So there you have that. So Wyoming is like inviting these fracking corporations in. Don't go to a socialist state. Don't go to one of these, you know, liberal eco-Nazi states where they put restrictions on these corporations. And by the way, in Wyoming, a state senator collected the private fees, by the way. So most fracking in the United States, 70% of it is done on federal lands. The taxpayer is only getting $4 an acre per year for these. They're lending it out cheap. They're letting this land out cheap to them. But the private citizens are allowed to put these fracking wells on their land in exchange for money from the fracking company. Well, a state senator there has 40 of these fracking rigs on his land. All of them have been abandoned. So the state senator is the one passing the law to get the taxpayer to pay for the cleanup of his property because the private corporation of which he collected the private profits has abandoned them. So now he's going to get the taxpayer to make his property habitable again.
Ray Davies, the Kinks. I wonder if they can hear that on this broadcast on Resonance 104.4 FM in London.
Probably. I'm sure they can. So, now the other story that's happened is, okay, so we had Patriot Resources in Wyoming. Over in West Virginia, another state very similar in terms of, probably even more so, because in Wyoming you have a lot of wealthy people, huge landowners. It's out west. In West Virginia you have more that inbred sort of, sort of backcountry hillbilly thing. So here you have Freedom Resources. Freedom.
Right.
Freedom. Well, they have basically no regulators found this. Apparently some dude, we don't know how long this chemical leak had been going on, but this chemical, it's not lethal. It's not going to kill you immediately, but it's very toxic and carcinogenic and all sorts of mess up your organs sort of stuff. Was pouring into the water table, into the stream, into the river. So 300,000 people have been told not to use their water at all. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the federal taxpayer, is bringing in water for 300,000 people, just like they have to bring in water to Pennsylvania because the fracking has destroyed the water there. So here we have FEMA bringing in water to West Virginia. And the taxpayer is going to have to clean up all of this disaster there. Freedom is just going to, right now it's not bankrupt, but I guarantee you it will declare bankruptcy within this week, so they won't have to pay this cleanup cost.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, the taxpayer idiot who said, well, I get a $20,000 a year job. It's in my own self-interest to have this company there. So I could man the gates or something at the front, you know, reception or something. But the taxpayer get stuck with a tens of millions of dollar bill, and you know, somebody further downstream, their children get cancer, and the company's bankrupt, so they'll never have to pay.
Right, and the corporations always fall back on this idea that all the problems stem from the government.
Yeah.
It's the government. The government and all the regulations, that's what makes it impossible for us to bring you cheap energy and clean water. When that's not true, because if there was a government in place, then none of this would be happening. So what's funny is that when these corporations say it's the government, well, the White House is empty. There's nobody there. Congress is completely empty. There's nobody there. There's nobody representing the interests of the common good. The Congress in America, there's something like 500 congressmen, they represent 50%. So the legislative body in America is dominated on a percentage basis by multimillionaires. And they're there to rubber stamp what any corporation fakakta scheme they come up with. So there is no government. So don't blame the government, because ultimately the government is you. So when the corporations say, well, the government is the problem, they're blaming you. They're scapegoating you. That's why they're killing you. Pretty soon the propaganda will come out where you, the non-multimillionaire crony capitalist, is a rat.
Well, you know what? You have to watch George Galloway's show today, Sputnik. He interviews Seamus Milne, and it really is amazing what how he explains what happened in the 1984-85 miners' strike and the demonization of Arthur Scargill. It's amazing how so simple it is to divide and conquer a population. Most people are very hungry and tired and in debt and just schlubs, and they don't, you know, it's easy to target them and say all your problems are because of this guy or that guy or those people or that sector of society. And don't look at us, look at them. And because they get the media. So what Seamus Milne really eloquently points out is how basically Arthur Scargill was right and Margaret Thatcher was lying. And what the freedom of information, the 30 years rule they have here, where after 30 years, all cabinet notes are released to the public. Well, what they found is that, you know, Arthur Scargill at the time told the scab miners up in Leicester and Nottingham, he told them that there was a hit list of 75 mines that Margaret Thatcher was going to shut down, and it included theirs. They thought at the time they were very right-wing and like beating up the actual striking miners. They were saying, these miners, that the scab ones were saying, Margaret Thatcher's going to keep our mines open. We are hard workers. We are good people. We help the government. We have nothing to hide. Well, the tabloids, even the non-tabloids, the so-called legitimate press, the Times, the Telegraph, they just reprinted whatever Margaret Thatcher told them as the headline. So anyway, those scab workers, if it weren't for them, the strike would have succeeded. And this is what the documents show, that they came very close to succeeding. Well, what happened when the strike ended? The mines were shut down immediately, including all the scab workers lost their jobs. So Arthur Scargill was right. Margaret Thatcher was lying. The population bought it, and so did the scab workers.
Yeah, those scabs in Nottingham. I mean, what have you wrought? I mean, look at your family. Look at your children. Look at your daughter out there on a Saturday night with her tights pulled up around her head on the park bench, drunk, in a binge drinking fit, having been brutally violated by dozens of Sheffield Wednesday fans. I mean, that's what you have wrought. You've turned your children into obese, alcoholic troglobites, roaming the benches of the northern cities looking for another hit of methamphetamine or crack, because you are a scab. This is what has visited upon you now in your household, scab.
Well, the interesting thing is that is, I mean, There are a lot of downsides to French life, but one thing was always stood out for us when we were there, and it was so hard at first to understand and read what a strike was, when a strike was happening, what was actually going on. But never ever, see, what would have happened if it were France where that the miners' strike was, is it wouldn't have been miners alone. The firemen's union, the police union, the farmers, the nurses' union, all of these workers would have gone out and been on the streets with them. And this still happens to this day in France. Whenever it'll be like the students striking. I remember a student strike a few years ago, and like farmers were out there, and I was like, what are all these farmers here with all their like broccoli and vegetables being dumped on the street? But they were there to support the students because they reckon that if the rights of one group, they know how the government works. They divide and conquer, how the elite work. They divide and conquer the peasants. They know the prisoner's dilemma. The whole U.S. justice system works on that method. It's like, you're going to face 120 years or we'll give you 1 year in prison and you turn on your friends. And they always do it.
Well, they call it the National Razor. It was a technology that was invented by Monsieur Guillotine. And the Reign of Terror did a lot to get rid of the toffs.
Well, the people united will never be divided, I think is what one of the phrases they say. But anyway, the Seamus Milne interview is really interesting. He's so articulate, and it's a really fascinating story. I mean, you out there in the audience will know more about it, but so a lot of it was new to me. I knew of a great miner strike, and I knew of Arthur Scargill and all this, the basic gist of it, but there were a lot of details that were so fascinating. But the thing that always stands out to me is how throughout history propaganda always works. The population believes whatever they see in print. It can be the most outlandish thing and they believe it, as long as the authorities say it is so, or the newspaper says it is so, they'll always believe it. It's just amazing to me.
Well, that's what makes the American Revolution so amazing, is that there were no scabs. So all the signatories to the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence, who all, almost to a man, were hunted down and came to very inglorious, violent ends due to their standing up to the monarchy. Nobody was a scab. So we had no Nottingham scabs.
Well, there were a few loyalists, and they ended up moving a lot of them to Canada. They, after the revolution succeeded, they went up to Canada.
Yeah, well, can Canada have them, you know. But that's why the revolution was successful, is because there was solidarity. And it was driven by intellectuals like Thomas Jefferson. Unfortunately, in Britain, there is no one of this intellectual acuity. You have some smart chaps, but they're all very elliptical, aren't they? All the intelligence in this country is elliptical, in that it just goes around and around in circles, and it's all about thinking of another excuse not to act. That's pretty much the intellectual basis of Britain, is like, how can I think of another way not to do anything? That's pretty much the sum total of the intellectual output of this country.
Well, I like that. You know, there was also Ben Franklin. You know, there was quite a mix of people. So Ben Franklin was, of course, didn't even finish high school. He went to the equivalent of, I think he was educated until about 12 years old. And he was like a self, well, we used to have more of this back then, but he was self-taught, self-read, he was just a thinker and an innovator and a curious mind. It's something we don't have much of these days, curiosity, curious minds. I think because most of us are so in debt, and so the struggle to finance your trip across the city on the London Underground to get to work, and the hassle and the congestion and all the people, and it's just hard to think.
Yes, it's impossible to rise above the propaganda needs of a corrupt kleptocrat. How much more time we got?
We have about 20 minutes.
Really? I put on pause, I think.
Okay. And we're back. That was another fraction of a second break. We're in a new location with the air conditioning on, so if you hear that in the background. But I wanted to say, because I've just discovered something interesting. Here's Chris Hedges, the journalist, said, "We must either defy the corporate state or accept our extinction as a species." We have been stripped of the power to express dissent or effect change. Rebellion is the only way to remain fully human. So that's from Chris Hedges. Now I'm going to turn to the Times here in London. And the headline, Bill Gates is most admired in the world. Billionaire philanthropist beats Pope and Obama. So how can we ever defy the corporate state if the most corporate of them all, the most pernicious, as you say, monopolist, the most pernicious in terms of intentionally degrading the entire World Wide Web for the NSA? How can this, what hope do we have but extinction?
We don't. But, I mean, this adulation of Bill Gates, it's very similar to what you see in North Korea with Kim Jong-un. People are fanatically crying hysterically in support of their dear leader because they know that if they don't, they'll end up in a gulag. And this is what the threat of America. Either support people like Bill Gates or be cut off from the grid and end up living on the street and or in prison.
The most admired British person is, of course, the Queen. It's like people like aristocracy. This is why we have these sort of perpetual feudalism. This is the thing people seem to admire. Now, of course, number three on the list is Vladimir Putin. And the reason why they say Vladimir Putin made it to this global list, because this is based on a poll from like a dozen nations around the world, is that the overwhelming number of Russians voted for Vladimir Putin. So this, again, despite the propaganda that he's had to steal an election, that he's hated, and blah, blah, blah. Unlike Obama, by the way, who has like a 30% approval rating, apparently everybody voted for Putin in Russia.
Right, right. Well, I mean, as a statesman, he's done some good stuff in the last few years, certainly better than anyone in the U.S. So he sorted out the Syria situation, for example, and he's had some other triumphs.
Well, there you have it. I mean, we're doomed if people think Bill Gates is somebody to be admired, because it's how much better our world would be. It's hard to imagine, but if it hadn't been for him not only monopolizing the desktop for all those years, but providing back doors for the NSA into everything is quite remarkable. Now, let's see what we have over at maxkaiser.com. We're going to go over there, see what else is happening. Oh, I saw this interesting story from RTE, which is the Irish broadcaster. And Department of Finance cannot locate banking crisis files. So there was a Freedom of Information request put into the department in 2009, asking for all correspondence between the late Mr. Lenihan, Brian Lenihan, who was the finance minister at the time, and the chief executives of the banks during the period August 2008 to March 2009. The department released 8 items alone, fully redacted, not one single word available to see. Now, they're demanding the other copies of what else there must be, and they've hemmed and hawed and hemmed and hawed, and now all these years later, it turns out they say they have lost all of the documents, and they can't find anything other than those 8 pieces of paper.
All right. Well, the financial pogrom in Ireland is a good case study. I mean, a lot of immigrants left Ireland because they speak English, because they have some basic skills. They can go to Australia, Canada, the United States, and they can find jobs, etc. And we saw the same thing under, Germany's Nazi Hitler. You had a lot of people emigrate to the United States before they were gassed to death. So here in Ireland, a lot of people have left before they were financially destroyed. The people who are left behind are being cut off from the grid and unceremoniously asked to walk the plank, effectively. Just do us all a favor and top yourself. We don't have any of the documents. We have no financial records. We have no paperwork. You know, to put this together with the Bill Gates NSA story, clearly, because the NSA collects every piece of data that transmits electronically on the face of the earth in a database, then these documents that they claim don't exist anymore, that's blatant lie. They exist on somebody's database, either in the U.S. or somewhere in Europe. They just don't want to have to themselves go to jail. That's their self-preservation kicking in. They're like, well, if we show you these documents, we'll end up in jail, so we'll just not show you the documents, even though they do exist. And to say that these documents are lost in this day and age, when everything is copied and stored on databases of our allies, well, we know the population is too stupid to make that connection.
Well, the government there says they're going to launch some sort of feasibility study about improving their records management, which is classic. Of course, that's how it works. Enough of the population will say, well, they're trying their best. Well, in the United States, about J.P. Morgan, who has been who paid fines on something like 14 or 15 crimes last year, just in 2013 alone. Basically, if you had committed those 14 crimes for which they paid fines, you would never, ever see the light of day. Maybe they might even throw your children and grandchildren in prison just to make up for the 400, 500 years you were sentenced to. Now, the other big story, we mentioned Russia and that Putin was the number three most admired person in the world. Well, here's huge news. Iran, Russia negotiating big oil for goods deal. Iran and Russia are negotiating oil for goods swap that would let Iran lift oil exports substantially in defiance of the Western sanctions that helped force Tehran in November to agree a preliminary deal to end its nuclear program. Three Russian and Iranian sources close to the negotiation said final details were in discussion for a barter deal that would see Moscow buy up to 500,000 barrels of oil a day in exchange for Russian equipment and goods. Now, of course, the first question, Max, that everybody had was, why would Russia need to import 500,000 barrels of oil? Because, of course, they are an oil export nation. They are one of the largest oil producers in the world, if not the largest, actually, right now. So what do you think is going on?
Well, the value of energy isn't going down in value. It's a finite resource. So why not do trade? It's hundreds of millions of dollars worth of trade. They're selling stuff to Iran. They're taking oil. They can always resell oil to Europe and therefore get around the Iranian embargo to sell oil to Europe. They just go through Russia. It's called free market capitalism. But, of course, America, you know, think 6 months ago with the vote that was in the parliament to attack Syria in a repeat of the dodgy dossier episode that led to the Iraq invasion. They were cooking the books again here in Parliament. They were going to have a vote to invade Syria along with America on behalf of Israel to stop Iran from having a independent central bank and having an independent energy industry. But this Parliament, for all the negatives that we fling at this country, they did have a vote, and they voted not to invade Syria. And the Prime Minister had to go along with that vote. And as a result, you now have a huge deal between Iran and Russia. Had Britain and America started bombing Iran, like people like the senator from Arizona, John McCain, who was obviously suffering from severe brain damage, if they had gone in and started bombing Iran, you would not have any free trade between Iran and Russia. And now those jobs would never have been created. The GDP would not have been created. The free market would not have operated. So there were, I think, 13 votes difference between invading and not invading here in this parliament. And they voted not to. And as a result, you have a huge business that's going to benefit Iran, benefit Russia.
Well, of course, oil is fungible. So when Iran sends it to Russia, Russia can send it to wherever they sell it to, Germany. And Germany has technically not violated the sanctions against Iran. I'm sure that is part of what is going on. We don't know. You know, when they make these deals now, they know how to make the deals without having the NSA listen in anymore, because they know that their technology is all buggy and corrupt. So I'm sure Merkel is happy with this deal, because Germany will be getting oil cheaper as well.
I noticed on Friday the dollar suffered a pretty sizable downward price move. And this type of deal, bilateral deal, of course, means that dollar won't be used. The dollar was not going to be used in these deals. The ruble probably was up a little bit against the dollar. The Iranian currency has been under attack now due to economic terrorism perpetrated by America and the UK. I'm sure that the Iranian, I think it's the rial, is probably had a good day as well against the dollar. So the dollar is on the way out as world reserve currency. It's lost 10 or 15% of its total dominance over the past 10 years or so. It's heading to under 50% of global trade in dollar terms, which would mean, therefore, that the world reserve currency status would be finished once it is under 50% and no longer has the majority. And at that point, I think you'll start to see massive corrections. You'll see gold and silver correct up. You'll see stocks and bonds correct down. And you'll see the ruble trade up, Iran's currency trade up, and that's when you'll see the global rebalancing.
Well, so I want to talk about this. You know, we were talking about the NSA and Microsoft and Yahoo and all these people on NSA surveillance for corporations. Now, I want to talk about Jacob Applebaum's speech at the Chaos Computer Club conference just last month, a few weeks ago, and it was really quite fascinating. Basically, there's two core programs, one called Turmoil, and it's a passive collection of all data. Everything's over the internet, mobile phones, any communication at all, they passively collect. That's called Turmoil. Then they have Turbine, which is deep packet injection. It's active and aggressive. It takes your stuff. And in particular in the UK, he was talking about you know, all the cell towers. Well, GCHQ just basically hijacks them and takes all data from there. And they have a hardware, actually, that does this. But he was saying, for example, and Jacob has visited Julian Assange in the Ecuador embassy. And he said, if you go into the Ecuador embassy, your mobile phone will suddenly say, welcome to Uganda cell phone service. And this is because they hastily put in a new server in there, cell tower, which still has, that was originally designed for Uganda. Uh-huh. So it masks, it cloaks it, it pretends it's, you're on Uganda cell. Mm-hmm. You actually aren't on a cell tower in Uganda, but the GCHQ had coded it to look like that. So right. For local Ugandans, when they were spying on them, here they accidentally forgot to recode it to act like it's Three or Orange or, you know, Vodafone in the UK.
Yeah. Well, remember, the NSA are made up of men who, when they're not at the NSA, are down at the public restroom at the nearest glory hole.
Cottaging.
You know, cottaging. I mean, that's their mental state. They like to stick their wings into anonymous holes in gas stations and hope for the best. You know, that's their policy with the NSA. We'll just stick our electronic wing into everything and see what happens. Mm-hmm. There's no policy, really. There's no ethics. There's no morals. There's no law. They're just scum, basically.
Yeah, but the thing is that, like, so much of the population feels like, you know, okay, I'm a 400-pound person that has to ride around on a motorized vehicle, you know, adult-sized tricycle. I work at Walmart. I'm on the dole. I have food stamps. And, you know, it makes maybe their life feel more important that they're being spied on. And so if you get enough of those people, you know, wanting this and that somebody's paying attention to them, that they're just not some schlub in a sea of schlubs.
I never really thought of it that way. That people who have their self-esteem is so low that the fact that they're being spied on gives them some self-esteem.
Yeah.
Like, they must be important enough to have their rights violated, even though they have no job, they're dying from diabetes, and all they do is play with their genitals all day. They must have some reason to be spied on. Therefore, I'm spied on. Therefore, I am.
Exactly. That's the mentality I see all around me.
Yeah. Well, it's a brilliant propaganda move. They've co-opted an entire species of animal here on planet Earth, the Homo sapien, which will go down basically having masturbated itself to death.
Hey, well, speaking of that sort of language, by the way, we're going to be soon launching a more, subscription section of our site for more podcasts. Right now, we have a lot of demands on our time, and allocating our time efficiently is, we get a lot of people, a lot of emails, a lot of tweets, a lot of comments saying, you know, come on, give us more radio content, give like what you used to do in Paris when we would do a daily podcast. But, you know, time is money, and we want to have a private sort of no off-com regulated sort of podcast where Max can bring out his full, say all the stuff he wants to say in the way he wants to say it, and some hangouts and some interesting other video content.
Yeah, and this is podcasts, you know, when you put them all together, this is, I think we've done over 1,400 podcasts, including these shows, over the past 10 years. And so this is the one thing that's been the thread that's connected all of our movies and shows and podcasts and radio shows, and has been this show. And so we will continue to do this show, and we want to do more of it because it's still a seedbed of creativity that then ends up in our TV shows and our films and everything else. So I guess the good news is that in 2014, there'll be more of good stuff like this.
Yeah, that's a subscription-only bit, but, you know, you don't have to. The regular MaxKaiser.com will still be there, and Resonance 104.4 FM will still be there, and the Kaiser Report will still be on our main site. But also, speaking of subscriptions and things like that, Resonance 104.4 FM is about to do their annual fundraising. They need to come up with at least £50,000 to stay on air, keep all of their, you know, satellites or whatever their antenna thing, the thing that keeps, you know, allows you to hear this as you're driving around London. And they are looking for some donations. So please, please, please put your hand in your pocket. Take out a fiver or tenner or a 20-er. They don't really call it a 20-er, do they?
No, they don't. They don't. They had the fiver, and that's it.
The tenner.
They call it a tenner?
Yeah.
Then everything above that is considered posh.
Yeah, it's too posh to have an at the end.
It's too posh. It's like, oh, a 20, mate. Oh, aren't we posh?
Well, if you happen to be posh enough to have a 20-pound note in your pocket, do send one along to Resonance 104.4 FM. Just put it in a little envelope and send it care of Resonance 104.4 FM on Borough High Street.
That's right. Just send them a big bag full of money, and I'm sure it'll get where it needs to go.
Yeah, it's just like Santa Claus. Everybody knows where Santa Claus lives. Everybody knows where Resonance 104.4 FM lives. And of course, I do want to make one correction from earlier in the show. Max did say about the fire station closed, the oldest fire station. We called it Clerkenwell. And I know people have been banging on the table and have been unable to listen since, because they're like, it's Clerkenwell, you yank. Why do they always have to pronounce words that aren't actually as it's written? It's written Clerkenwell, but they say Clerkenwell. It's like some sort of Masonic language.
Well, there's limey scum. That clearly. They just mispronounce words to be, scum-like.
Well, you know what? This is the end of the program. We've reached the end. And that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM with me, Max. No, me, Stacey Herbert, and Max Kaiser.
All right, you limey scum. Bye, y'all.
He's only saying that in a lovingly John Lydon-like way.
Yeah, right.